Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 235.
This week on the podcast, Trump spends 1 hour speaking unhinged words in a regular tone and is celebrated near and far for just sounding human.
And overheard in Jefferson Beauregard Session III's office, oh, those Russians.
Donald Trump resumes his Shabbat Twitter meltdowns, daring America to choose between trusting Breitbart and Barack Obama.
And Trump complains that healthcare is hard. Crybaby. Sad.
Donald Trump's literal tens of, well, just tens of supporters showed up to support the Donald Trump version of the biggest rally in American history.
And we live in a world in which Kanye and Winfrey's presidential campaigns might happen at the same time.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And this week we're welcoming a special guest. Yet again, we've been having a lot more guests than usual
yeah,
recently.
We have.
But my mom, Carla Nordstrom, is here to
faves.
Share. Usually we just secondhand share her political insights.
Yes.
But now she can have her theories firsthand. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
This was a crazy week.
Again.
We start every podcast saying that. But every week, something new and unexpected becomes the most the craziest thing we've ever experienced. Mm-hmm. This week, Trump gave the incoming president's version of the State of the Union, which is just a joint session with Congress. It has the same exciting beginning as the State of the Union, where everyone walks in and you get to see who shook hands and who didn't. Mm-hmm. Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Marco Rubio shared a very friendly looking hug that I was like, I don't know, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm comfortable.
Well, she helped deliver the White House to the Republicans.
Fair enough. Maybe they're good friends. but this was his first big speech as president, his first time having to do anything where he had to look presidential in front of everyone.
Right. Except his frigging inauguration.
Oh, right. Forgot about that
No,
one.
But I mean, like, this was... Not everybody was, that's sort of like a different thing.
Yeah,
but,
that's a celebration of your own victory. This is a time to bring the nation together.
This was more of the speech that one would have thought that he might have given at the inauguration. Because there was insane parts of the speech, obviously. But just like in a general tone, he sounded more,
His performance was less unhinged.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it was a campaign speech by a less unhinged person, which is why it would have been a great inauguration speech.
Yeah. But he got a lot of props for it because he...
Too many.
Too many, yes.
Because he didn't sound like a full raving lunatic. He only sounded like... His words were those of a raving lunatic.
Yes.
His performance, he comported himself as a member of the human race.
I think Bill Maher on Friday night was like, he was mad that he got so many props. And he said something to the effect of he was able to read words from a page or screen, which was something that the Olsen twins were successfully able to do for decades, basically.
Olsen twins, more successful at business than Donald Trump, I just want to point out.
That's also true, yes. We should slow down the
Van Jones got ripped apart on Twitter for even suggesting that. And it was interesting because you watched the pundit's response sort of start at shock that he had not turned red and started spitting on the stand. And then slowly you saw them sort of it started to dawn on them that what he'd said and the way he'd conducted himself still wasn't normal.
The actual words weren't great.
Right. Yeah. So it began as another sort of time that we realized that the press has no idea how to report on Donald Trump.
Right.
But it ended with pretty much everyone agreeing that the only impressive thing about the speech was that he had performed it accurately.
Right, and didn't turn an odd shade
of red. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
He didn't turn away. And the Democratic women did a fun protest move and wore all white.
Wore white.
It was actually, that was a pretty successful and very striking visual.
Yeah, I think all women in Congress should wear white. Because just to show how few there are.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Because I noticed that Kirsten Gillibrand and Liz Warren both wore purple.
Oh,
I don't know what that was about, but they took a picture together and they were like the Purple Caucus, and I was like, that's not a caucus.
No, that's not.
The women are wearing white. It's like you didn't hear that the women were wearing white.
Is that the ACLU color? Because weren't people wearing ACLU pins too?
Possibly.
Is that
I just
is
feel
that
like if everyone's
was?
Wearing white, that are women and you're a woman, the men can wear purple. Purple ties.
Right. Yeah,
whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't wear purple's a color of unity. I feel like.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
But like we're not feeling unity right now. Like Kirsten Gillibrand and Liz Warren we're not there to be like, we love our Republican colleagues.
No, they weren't.
It was funny though to watch how over the top the Republicans felt like they had to be in response to Donald Trump as opposed to any other Republican who's ever delivered a State of the Union. Because you know they like to get over the top.
I mean, for a lot of these guys, it's the first time they've gotten to go to one of these and then, you know, stand up and cheer.
Normally they have to grumble the whole time. Right,
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But so he did sort of begin by calling for unity, but it was an interesting choice because he started by condemning there's been like a rash of like vandalism at Jewish cemeteries and threats of bombings at like Jewish like day schools and things like that. And then there were two Indian men in Kansas that got shot recently. And he literally said, while we may be a nation divided on policy, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its ugly forms, which I think most of us stand united in, but he would be one notable exception to that.
Well, and he had said earlier in the day, he had blamed it on Jewish people.
Yeah. Earlier in the day, he was at a meeting with the Pennsylvania Attorney General and suggested that these bombings, the bombing threats at JCCs might be false flag operations to make Trump supporters look bad.
God.
I mean, unbelievable with these people.
But I think it felt like a laundry list. So it didn't feel like it was genuine.
Right. He didn't feel, no.
It's like, I'm going to get up and I'm going to say the things everyone wants me to say. And, you know, so this, and this. But he didn't, it didn't sound genuine.
No, well, and that's the thing. The last
personal reference point.
Right. Well, exactly. And because the last time that he did this, where he sort of like did like attempt to speak out about this, he doesn't understand why he's supposed to condemn them or like what, you know what I mean? Like he's saying that he condemns them, but he doesn't know what that actually means. And he doesn't know why it's important that he should.
Right. Well, and he is literally only doing it as a performance piece. He's not a good actor. He's been playing himself this whole time, you guys. He's not a good actor.
Right, exactly.
So he doesn't really have the ability to sound genuine when he's saying things that aren't literally coming off the top of his head right now, which is what the problem with the speech was. But here are some ways in which, despite the calmer tone, this was actually a pretty incendiary speech.
Yeah.
Among them was the fact that even though his national security advisor, now H.R. McMaster, asked him not to use the term radical Islamic terrorism anymore, he threw one of those in there because you gotta get the base all fired up.
Yeah.
He vowed to restore integrity and the rule of law to our borders. But this was a weird week because on Tuesday he had made a comment about wanting to pass an immigration reform bill that would have granted
a path to citizenship.
Yeah, would have granted a path to citizenship millions of undocumented people.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Then he neglected to mention that during the speech, but everyone was listening really carefully at that portion because they were waiting for him to say something.
Maybe that was a new idea that he had.
Right, he threw the entire Republican establishment into mayhem the day before. And also he talked about increasing border security and also funding and, you know, hiring more border agents as he's been talking about.
Yeah.
But we should maybe point out that we have increased border funding like massively in the last 8 years and hired more border agents in that time. Like this is the one area where we've been increasing funding pretty consistently for a while now.
Yeah.
So we don't need this to be where our money goes anymore.
And we certainly haven't been having much trouble deporting people for the last 8 years.
No, we're accomplishing that pretty.
Yeah.
But then the other weird immigration thing that he talked about was voice.
Yes.
The victims of immigration crime engagement.
Right. There was an audible groan in the room when he announced this too, which I was
heartened by. Full on authoritarian nonsense.
Oh, like totally.
He said he'd order DHS to create this office and said, "We are providing a voice for those who have been ignored by our media and silenced by special interests."
Like, who?
Question. Which special interests are we talking about? People who like immigrants? And is that a special interest group?
I don't know. Or
is there money behind just like people who like immigrants? People who aren't just like cruel? Cruel caucus? Like what is he talking about?
I don't know.
But also literally everybody who has a basic command of math knows that immigrants commit crimes at way lower rates than the regular population. So this is actually a massive waste of resources.
Yeah.
Because there is crime being committed in the U.S. as there is everywhere in the world. And those crimes are being largely committed by Americans.
Yes.
That's something that statistically has been shown consistently for many years now.
Yeah.
But also, I think what's so shameful about it, it's a way of identifying a group of people who are covered by the same laws that everybody else is covered by.
Right.
But yeah. You basically, you know, point them out and say...
Then everyone notices
and then
they
people
commit.
Notice. And the thing is, this was used in Germany.
Yeah, this has been used in every authoritarian regime.
Yeah. I'm sure.
This goes along with his idea of making a list of immigrant crimes. Remember when he was talking about that? Which I think is actually like so straight out of the Nazi playbook that it was like not cool to say.
Yeah.
Like he didn't really get away with saying that one.
He also had some of these victims there, and he's been carting them around for a long time. He had them on the campaign with him at various different stops. But, I mean, that was...
I know that a lot of his shout-out section, as I like to call the section of the State of the Union, where you point to the crowd to random people for no particular reason, was victims of crimes that have been committed by immigrants. But all of these people were the victims of just, like, crimes that could have been committed by anybody.
Right.
Right.
And also, if he'd had to find a list of people who regular crimes had been committed against, it would be an impossible feat. It's like fairly easy to identify the people that had immigrant crimes committed against them because there's not that many
of them. There's not that many, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You can fit them in the room.
You can call all those people and invite them fairly quickly.
Exactly. Like if you tried to find a list of people that like white idiots with guns had murdered, you'd be there all day.
Maybe just people that police had killed.
Yeah, exactly.
It would take forever.
Yeah. But he also took credit for everything that's ever happened that's been good.
Right, in the last six weeks.
No, not in the last. Since November.
Right. But he took credit for them as having had happened in the last 6 weeks, but they haven't happened in the last six
weeks. And not only that, most of them were based on things that had happened before he took office anyway.
Right,
these
were
things that were set in motion before he took office. He named every company that's decided to stay or invest in the U.S. since the election. Most of these happened under the Obama administration, though, and were completely unrelated to him and happened long before he got involved.
Well, he's been doing this for a long time. He took credit for the December jobs report, too, because it came out in January and he had just taken office at that point.
Like,
but, like, it was... like,
first of all, that's going to get adjusted 17 times. You don't want to take early credit for a good jobs report. You want to be careful with that. But... he took credit for all the stock market gains, even though the stock market was literally just rebounding from the time that he was running for president and it lost $3 trillion.
Right.
And then, you know, there was that weird like Lockheed jet where they dropped the price of the jet.
Yeah.
But that was actually something that happened before he got involved in the negotiations.
Yeah.
Like the State of the Union was just him taking credit for everything that has happened.
Yeah. And also it's important to remember, too, and I had forgotten this until I read an article about this and may have even been this one that we're referencing here. But we are until October, we are in Obama's last fiscal year.
Right.
So anything to do with
the budget,
like, you know, if he's talking about deficits dropping or anything like that, like until... like, literally almost 6 months from now. Like,
He's had nothing to do with it.
He doesn't get to take credit for it. Right,
no.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he'll try.
He'll certainly try.
Oh, he'll try. Right, exactly.
He loves credit.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The weirdest part of the speech was when he declared that he kept going on about how clean our water and air are going to be.
Right.
Which is interesting because his budget proposal targets clean water and air programs pretty specifically.
I just don't know why, like...
why bother saying that?
That's what I was going to say. Like,
just don't say it.
We know that he's anti-environment. So, like, he has shown at every turn that he is. I mean...
right, there's no fact other than him saying this.
Between the person that he appointed for the EPA, executive orders, the fact that we're building all of these pipelines. Like, it seemed like a curious thing to bring up because all it does is just, like, ask... to be, you know, fact-checked and called out for.
It's also another one of those times where he's, like, using superlatives in a time that maybe he should refrain, like how he said that everyone was going to have fantastic healthcare many times.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that would be great. We'd all love fantastic healthcare. We'd all love clean water and air. Like, show us one single time that you actually, like, policy-wise advocated for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you can't.
Yeah.
But so the, I think, most cynical moment of the night was this Yemen soldier's wife.
Yes.
That was, first of all, we should point out...
well, no, she wasn't Yemen, though.
No. The guy who died in the Yemen raid.
Right.
So, yeah, he's not a Yemeni soldier.
No, right.
He was a soldier in Yemen.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Navy SEAL William Ryan Owens, his wife Karen was there and was one of the shout-out section people.
Yeah.
And it was so cynical in part because, obviously, she's a woman who's just lost her husband and is... possibly quite confused. His whole family's come out against Trump, so
yeah.
She's in a weird situation to begin with. But he kept claiming that they had gained useful intelligence and that this raid was necessary and important.
Right.
And the intelligence community has confirmed that we gained no intelligence
gained
from
no
this
intelligence.
Raid, that it was botched horribly,
right.
And that he basically died in vain.
Yeah, and it
because
wasn't,
of Trump.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't an intelligence operation.
Operation, right.
I mean, it could have been something that might have gained intelligence, but
that wasn't the intention.
They were intending to kill a low-level, I think it was an Al-Qaeda
yeah.
operative
and instead
in
we
Yemen.
Killed a lot of civilians and an American
right,
soldier.
Exactly, yes.
And an American child.
And an American child,
yes,
an American
child.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And earlier in the afternoon, Trump had also claimed that the raid was planned by the Obama administration, which is interesting because it was planned on January 25th, that's 5 days after he took office, at a dinner with Pence, Bannon, Kushner, and a bunch of other advisors
right.
That he had in public, basically. He didn't have it in the Situation Room
right.
where you're supposed to plan these things.
Yeah.
It was like that time that he was having an intelligence briefing with Shinzo Abe, like at
right.
Mar-a-Lago's dining room.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, it was one of those meals. He had a dinner that is on, sort of, that is like to public knowledge where this was planned.
Yeah.
On January 25th.
Yeah.
Time that he was the president.
And this is a thing that they have been. This is the story they've been peddling for a long time, is that this was planned under the Obama administration. And everybody involved was sort of like, we were at all of these meetings, and this was like not...
This was not planned by us.
This was not planned by us.
Factually not.
It certainly wasn't. It wasn't given the go-ahead by them.
No. Yeah. This was something that got discussed by the Obama administration,
right.
and they decided not to enact this
right.
plan
exactly.
because it was terrible.
Right.
Basically, they decided it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
But then also the fact that that same day, earlier in the day... He blamed it on the military.
Well, yeah, he blamed Ryan
Ryan
Owens's death on his own generals at that same thing where he was saying that the Obama administration.
Well, yeah, and I think Sean Spicer at one point this week got asked about this too because there was some blowback for that, and he made some comment along the lines of, you know, Ryan knew what he was getting into with this or something,
right.
which is accurate. I mean, Navy SEALs do know that is a thing that could happen, but it's also not something that you usually hear from.
You don't
like,
blame the Navy SEAL
from the government
for following
for
orders.
Being like, well, he knew he might die. Like
right.
that's just not usually
yeah.
what you say.
No, that's not a very sensitive way to go about it.
It's not. No.
But this was like applause went on forever for her. But he in the middle of it kept taking credit for himself for causing the applause. He was like, this is the longest applause in state of the union history. It was like he was congratulating himself for the entire length of the applause.
But then when he said that he was something like he was glad he was dead because this created so much applause.
Yeah, he said something like he's looking down proud of the applause.
Yeah.
I was like,
that he died for this. It was
so tacky and disgusting.
And the fact that the press didn't
pick
that right up and say that was in such
well they were
taste.
Confused because he said it without being read and they were like how right. do these seem like words that we understand but they didn't think about what the words meant
right.
you know
right.
they were too confused. By the way, the fuck was Steve Beshear giving the Democratic
Beshear.
Response for
right
do you
I,
not know who he is? Probably not if
no.
you're a person who's alive in 2017 because he's nobody right now.
Yeah,
he's the former governor of Kentucky
and he was obviously the intention
right.
was that Kentucky was one of the, you know, real
few red states
right that took that well and right and he was a Democratic
right.
governor and they took, you know, really they really embraced Obamacare.
Yeah,
they took the
Medicaid money.
They had Connect, which
yes.
was like the state exchange,
and it worked.
And it worked. They really went for it, and like obviously
until they elected Republicans
and
got
talked
rid of it.
In his speech about how they were going to repeal and replace Obamacare, and there's obviously that's a huge issue
well,
that we're dealing with right now. So
in
like
Kentucky,
right?
Because
they elected Republicans
yeah.
right after him.
Yeah, yeah.
He basically
yeah.
did it because he knew he was on his way out. He's in
right.
his 70s, and
yeah.
he knew there would be political blowback, but it didn't matter. So
right.
he did it basically under great duress in
but
order
also,
to
right.
make it happen.
Another part of it was that, and this became a problem for the new governor, is because it's Kentucky and because of the coal mining, there are people, a lot of people with very serious health issues.
Yeah.
yeah.
And so
right.
he had to do
They have
it.
Industry.
And many of them are now though. Without jobs, too, because
yeah.
those coal jobs
yeah.
are going
As
down.
We
so,
learned from Mitch McConnell's town
hall
last
week.
Right,
exactly. Yeah.
right.
Yeah. yeah. But in any case... Still a curious choice, I would contend, because I feel like
right.
if our bench is so lame that we need a 72-year-old ex-governor who's not currently in public office to
right.
deliver our response to the State of the
yeah.
Union or the joint
right.
session, whatever.
I just think that if you're looking for someone who can speak about, you know, some of the positives of Obamacare, I would contend that literally any Democrat could do that.
all of them. Yeah. And especially any Democrat from a state that took the money, which is most Democratic states.
Yeah.
Have fucking Kamala Harris come on.
Right? Like, yeah, it just seems like you could have had some,
like, literally anybody from a state.
Yeah, but I think another part of it is that so many of the Republican hopefuls went down the tubes with giving the response. Bobby Joe.
Oh, that could be true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Marco Rubio still made it into running for president, but when he drank the water.
Yeah, that's true.
The guy from
there's
Virginia.
There's been some bad luck there.
There's been some very bad luck, and I think the Democrats may have thought, you know what, we don't want to fall into that hole.
That's
and
true, because he certainly gave a response that no one will remember.
Exactly.
And he's probably not a person who intends to run for president at any point.
Or do
anything else. He is probably not going to run for president because he forgot which party he belonged to.
So true. Well, he belongs to all of them, according to him.
Yeah.
He said, I'm a proud Democrat, first and foremost. I'm a proud Republican and Democrat and mostly American.
So good. It was a very Palin-esque statement of his, sort of.
So, yeah, apparently because he's just been hanging out not doing much for the last few years, he's not all that brushed up on which party he belongs to and how to deliver that comment in a speech context. In any case, I do feel, though, like this, there is no moment in which the Democrats have crashed and burned in a response like this. Only Republicans have done this. It's been a terrible time for Republicans. I mean, they've had every hilarious, you know, they've been tons of hilarious.
Well, a Democrat hilarity. Hasn't given one in a long time, obviously.
Well, that's true, but think of a time in history that for years on end they had running jokes with Democrats delivering ridiculous, you know, speeches? Like, all of the Republican responses that went down because they seemed either severely unhinged or hilariously dehydrated. It was not because... Yeah.
I don't think there used to be those, though.
I think that started...
When did it start?
I don't know, but I mean, I think it may have started with Obama because the Republicans, because remember one of the first ones that he did, there were two responses. There was the party response.
Yeah, and then Michelle Bachmann, where she couldn't find the camera.
Yeah, right. Remember? She was just like delivering into the corner.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I couldn't remember them before that. I don't know. I can't look it up right now, but I think
maybe.
You may be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and there was the bread bags, the Joni Ernst.
Oh, the Joni Ernst bread bags story.
There was
the Bobby Jindal, just general unhingedness. Yeah. Christine O'Donnell gave one at one point, didn't she?
Oh, God, did she?
I think it was one of the responses, maybe? I can't remember.
Who knows?
Or, no, Sharon.
She's crazy.
I think Sharon Angle or something. Oh. One of those people gave the response to the response.
Oh, Lord.
The Tea Party has always done its own.
Yeah.
So in any case, people didn't have much time to spend fawning over the more palatable aspects of the Trump speech anyway.
Right. Yeah, we spent part of the next day thinking that Trump maybe had finally
found
righted
the presidency.
Right?
Found out he was president and thought, oh, I should deliver a speech that's not just like hateful, spitting nonsense.
But that lasted
so little time.
Yeah.
Less than 24 hours later, and by less than 24 hours, I mean about 12 hours later.
Right, exactly. The next morning, really.
Right. The next morning, we already had a new scandal because, shock of all shock, more Trump surrogates, it turns out, were having secret meetings with the Russians during the election. Because we've now discovered that then-Senator, current Attorney General, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, as we've taken to calling him on this podcast, and is also his legal name, failed to disclose two separate meetings with the Russian ambassador in the last year during his confirmation hearings, though he was specifically asked about them.
Right, and and therein lies the problem, because it is not that abnormal for someone who is on the Armed Services Committee to be meeting with people from foreign governments.
But no other person on the Armed Services Committee has met with the Russians. No. That seems pretty abnormal, but continue.
Yes.
Continue anyway.
Right. But let's say they were meetings under the guise of him being on the Foreign Relations Committee.
Then just say, I did, because I'm a senior member on the Senate Armed Services Committee.
And
we had to discuss that.
Yeah. Then why, when asked by two separate people in his confirmation hearings, both Al Franken and Leahy.
Yeah, Patrick Leahy.
Patrick Leahy, did he say no, he had not met with the Russians?
A definitive no. This is confusing because he is the person in charge of investigating things, and now as the person who needs to be investigated, we've landed ourselves in a complicated place.
Right.
So these meetings, which were in July and September, were both in person to some degree. The July one was at the RNC. It was backstage at the RNC. And there were other ambassadors there, but the Russian ambassador spoke to Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III there. But then the September one was a private conversation in Sessions' office between him and the Russian ambassador. It took place at the height of the Russian cyber hacking scandal, which or not scandal, but the actual cyber meddling.
Yeah.
And so in both meetings, he claims he's just doing it, you know, as a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. But in his Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings, he was asked by Al Franken what he would do if he learned there was evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign had communicated with the Russian government during the 2016 campaign. Right. Now, once again, he is a person who has communicated with the Russian government as a Trump surrogate during the 2016
campaign.
That's
another thing that we should know, is that people in the Senate,
he endorsed Trump in February
very
of 2016.
Early. He was really one of the most outspoken, really highest ranking people, because a lot of, you know, the Republican senators thought the guy was a joke.
Correctly.
And they were right. But but he really took to Trump early. So, I mean, here is
his answer to that Al Franken question. I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
Whoops.
Interesting that he would say that as a person who had directly had communications with the Russians twice. It's so interesting.
Yeah. And that's the problem with it. It's not.
He committed perjury. I don't care.
It's not that he met him.
He could have easily explained it away. Right. I am a senior member of the Armed Services Committee. I did it in my capacity as a member of the Armed Services Committee. But yes, I did meet with the Russian ambassador. And, you know, either here was the reason for the meeting or here was, you don't have to say what the content of the meeting was. You just have to say why you did it.
Yeah.
But he instead decided he hadn't done it.
Yeah.
And then in January, also as part of his confirmation hearings, Patrick Leahy had sent him written questions as part of their vetting process to appoint him attorney general. And one of the questions was, several of the president-elect's nominees or senior advisors have Russian ties. Have you been in contact with anyone connected to or any part of the Russian government about the 2016 election, either before or after Election Day? And he responded, no.
In a word, no.
In a word, no. But so his office is saying, well, these meetings weren't about the
election.
But it sounds like, especially in response to Franken's question, it might have been important to say, I have had contact with the Russians because I am a senator.
Right.
And especially
the way he answered the question, too, because I can see
he answered them definitively.
Right, exactly. But even I think the answer to Franken's question is more troubling because
he literally said I wasn't in contact with them.
Right. And admitted that he was a surrogate as well. Like, because Franken wasn't even necessarily asking him whether he was a surrogate. No. He sort of offered that up in the response, which was, in hindsight, stupid.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, because if he would have just said no to Franken, then he could have just then later said, well, I don't consider myself a surrogate for the campaign. You know,
right.
And so he sort of could have talked himself out of that. But the way he answered it, he really sort of
left us with no choice but to consider him a surrogate who was lying to the Senate.
Who was lying, exactly, yes.
Interestingly, though, just as some background, Washington Post contacted all 26 members of the Armed Services Committee and asked any of them whether they had met with Kislyak, who's the Russian ambassador. 20 responded. All said no, including John McCain, who's the head of that committee.
Right.
And then, obviously, 6 didn't reply.
Yeah, why didn't Kislyak stop by John McCain's office when he was visiting Sessions' office if McCain is the head of that committee?
If anyone was meeting with foreign governments about this, it might have at least been something that he was aware of.
Right. I think it's probably curious, John McCain doesn't much like the Russians, if I had to guess.
But I would certainly guess that. But I would think that other members of the committee would be aware of this meeting,
would have
maybe during the questioning brought this up.
Right.
Because
remember in September when he was in your office?
But it makes it seem like even they were not in the loop or they were not participating in these conversations.
Which makes it more questionable.
And a committee staffer for that committee pointed out that most members aren't really trying to meet with the Russians because relations have been pretty tense with Russia.
Right.
So that's not something members of the Armed Services Committee seek out for the most part.
Yeah.
So in any case, it's also worth noting that Sessions' personal take on Russia has evolved pretty dramatically, at least in terms of public statements, in the last year or two. In 2015, he said that the United States and Europe had to unify against Russia at something in Brussels. And then by July of 2016, he was praising Trump's plan to build better relations with Russia. Democrats started calling on him to resign pretty fast.
Immediately.
And that includes Pelosi and Schumer. Like, that includes the leadership.
Right, yeah.
They at least pointed out that he should recuse himself. And so for a few hours, we're sitting around being like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Well, at, I don't know the army time, 22 hours after the beginning of Trump's joint session speech, which is the only time he's gotten positive reviews on anything in his presidency, Jeff Sessions gives a press conference.
Mm, boy.
In which he says he's going to recuse himself from
except
these.
Only sort of.
Except only sort of. And we should point out that this press conference comes after Donald Trump says he has total confidence in Sessions, which is a sign that you're on his shit list.
Right, exactly.
Michael Flynn had his total confidence until an hour later when he resigned.
Or, well, at least Kellyanne Conway said total confidence.
That's true. Then they were mad at her.
Right, exactly. So he might not have actually had his total confidence, but yes.
But pressed further in the day, we discover that it wasn't a full recusal. He plans to recuse himself from investigations into the campaign's contact with Russia, but he said he would take decisions on investigations into the Russian hacking on a case-by-case basis.
But if he was involved in the campaign, then that would still... Then he should recuse himself from that as well, if he was a surrogate, which he called himself.
Right. He's announced in his the record that he's
on
a surrogate.
Record, right.
So in any case, Trump gave a presser right after that saying that... backing him up, saying he didn't make any misleading statements or whatever. But Trump apparently was just seething about it privately.
Real pissed.
Once again, tried to blame the leakers instead of the content of the leak in public.
Yeah.
And then later, actually, Sessions said that he was going to submit a supplement to the record for his congressional testimony saying that he had these meetings with the Russians.
Right, he's going
to clarify. But first of all, there's two things. One is that we found out that Flynn had had additional meetings beyond what we initially thought that include Jared Kushner before Trump took office
Because we thought Michael Flynn only had a phone call. Well, first, we only thought he had a text, I think. But I mean, but then we knew he had a phone call. And that's where the phone call was actually what brought him down.
The phone call was what brought him down.
Yeah.
But so in the midst of all of this, we learn that there has been even more contact with now disgraced member of Trump's cabinet and a current member of Trump's cabinet than we even thought.
Yeah.
So things are going terribly right now at this moment for Donald Trump.
Well, the media has been like, where we said the media still doesn't quite sort of messed up their coverage of Trump's speech.
Yeah, they don't know what to do about this.
They're really doing a good job on this, because the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New Yorker, New York Mag, I mean, everybody is sort of like writing great stuff about this right now.
Well,
I was going to say it's a huge scandal, but I mean, like, at least they're there.
Apparently, they had a meeting. Kushner had a meeting that Flynn was in attendance at, what it kind of sounds like, at Trump Tower. That was about a 20-minute meeting back in December. The New Yorker reported that Kushner was there, and then a White House spokesperson confirmed that Flynn was also there after a New York Times reporter asked her about it. So this got reported sort of piecemeal by a few different media. Yeah. This wouldn't be suspect except for what we know about the Trump administration's dealings with
also,
Russia.
Also, Kislyak wasn't caught going through the front door either. I don't know if you read that.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there were C-SPAN cameras there because Michael Flynn was there and they knew Flynn was there.
Yeah. So this was a meeting that was purposely kept secret.
Meeting.
I feel like this has been the problem. The reason it's suspicious is because they've been withholding information about their contact with Russia and only sort of letting it out in spurts over time as they've gotten caught lying about it.
Right, that's the thing.
The Flynn thing. They said in January that, it had only been a text message. Then that was immediately contradicted. So then they acknowledged that there had been phone calls. And then all of a sudden they find out that there were multiple telephone calls and now an in-person meeting.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think that, first off, telling the truth is generally just the way to go. But I feel like they could have, if they would have said everybody who was meeting with them, it probably would have looked like a lot. But if they would have I feel like they could have spun it in the way that it was it was in, most of these happened to be in December. And that was right when we had sanctioned Russia. And we need to, we need to talk to the Russians. We're having issues with them right now. While that still sounds highly questionable, it would have.
I believe that's called treason.
Treason
if they are discussing policy and undermining the current administration.
Right.
It's not treason if they're just having a dinner to introduce themselves. New administrations do that with ambassadors. But it is treason when all of a sudden Kislyak is calling Flynn because 13 Russian operatives have been axed from the State Department and asking him, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
It's treason when they're talking and Flynn is saying, don't do anything. You'll have a friend in the White House soon.
Yeah.
Is advising him on how to interact with the current administration.
Right.
That is treason.
Yeah. It's just the drip, drip, drip of this that is at least problematic for them in terms of, just how it plays. But you're right.
I think there's also another interesting part about it is that Trump's supporters are all older people. Mm. And to older people, the Russians have been the enemy. We grew up with the Russians as the enemy.
Yeah. Sure.
And we, you know, we had to do duck and tuck cover drills and all this kind of stuff. So I have a feeling, you know, they're trying to make it look normal.
Yeah.
But and those that group of people really haven't kicked in yet on this. But I think when they do, it's going to be very challenging for this administration, because I don't think there's any way you can explain to somebody in their 70s, 60s or 70s why suddenly
we're best friends with the Russians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and we, you know, we went through a time when we all felt very positive with Gorbachev.
Sure.
And so I think that people might say, if it had been someone like that, but they know that this is back to, you know, Putin is so similar to the leaders who we had so many challenges with.
Yeah.
So I think that has something to do with it, too.
Yeah, this is just in general, I think, you know, it's just like the worst PR that I can imagine for something that, like, are they up to sneaky shenanigans? Of course. They're, you know, how did they get in office? Like, sneaky shenanigans, of course. But, like, this, it seems like the only thing that they are supposed to have going for them as media people is an understanding of fucking PR.
I know.
And this is, like, such a poor, like, handling of this situation.
Yeah.
It's like they have no one with any PR expertise is in there.
Well, and that's what he was pissed about, too.
Oh, my God. My favorite part of this whole story is that there was a leak that was about Trump being angry about the leaks.
His anger
at the leaks got leaked.
Yeah, exactly. Because he was pissed because he was, you know, he was ready to, you know, just bask in the amazingness of his reviews of his speech the other night. And, like, apparently he really went, like, people claimed that in this leak, they had never seen him this mad when this Sessions thing happened, because he was just, like, you know, he was at his best at that point.
As our favorite kind of source, an anonymous source, said, there were a lot of expletives.
Nice.
Yeah, but also, one of the things we've got to keep in mind, this is a guy who does his own leaking.
He has a history of
leaking.
Totally,
well, that's
he does.
Thing. He was getting all angry about these leaks. A lot of people think that some of these leaks are coming from him.
Yeah.
I mean, remember the time that he called People Magazine to brag about his prowess with women?
Yeah.
He's not a stranger to leaking his own stuff.
Right.
But
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because this is part of his playbook already.
Yeah.
So, like, of course his administration is leaking.
Right?
Center. But, like, it feels like there are... And part of what he's frustrated about is his attempts at leaking are getting overshadowed by those attempts being leaked. You know? He told his administration to go basically leak positive information to the press, and instead of that information making it to the press, it was leaked that they were told to get, you know, give positive information to the press.
Yeah.
So, in any case... It's hilarious that he can't even keep a lid on a conversation about how he can't keep a lid on that.
I know. Yeah.
It's too sad.
Yeah.
It's sad. Sad, period.
Well, I think, though, also part of that is I don't think he wants the job.
No,
of
course.
I think that's the biggest frustration for
him.
Yeah. Because he thought if he was going to take the job, then we would just all
fall in line.
Yeah.
As we've done for every president in our experience.
Yeah, exactly, like, right?
Mm-hmm. In any case.
Like he did for the
last
one.
Like he did, right.
Right.
He decided to change the story to get rid of some of this, you know, Russia talk. move us on to a new and exciting territory.
Yeah.
So.
I think probably he was unsuccessful in this.
Correct. Well, he returned to one of his great Shabbat tweet storms.
Yes.
As we know, Ivanka and Jared are otherwise occupied on Friday nights and Saturday mornings because they are Orthodox Jews and they celebrate Shabbat.
Yeah, and they're his babysitters.
And they're his babysitters. And so normally he's only able to get in a good tweet storm during that window.
Yeah,
and so that window arose this week.
Right.
He held himself together last week, but this week he took the opportunity and at 6 a.m. just started up again with claims that the Obama administration had wiretapped his Trump Tower offices and were spying on him. He wrote tweet. I'm going to quote the tweet just so we know exactly what's going on here. Terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped. That's in quotes. No reason why. In Trump Tower just before the victory. Nothing found. This is McCarthyism.
Oh, McCarthyism.
Yes. Then he went on to call Obama a bad or sick guy and likened it all to Watergate.
Sure.
But the Obama administration has been pretty clear that they had a very specific rule that they were not to order individual wiretaps. That the only... You know, and only wings of the government that actually are responsible for investigations are ordering wiretaps under the Obama administration's rules. So an Obama spokesman said, As part of this practice, neither President Obama nor any White House official ever ordered surveillance on any U.S. citizen. Any suggestion otherwise is simply false.
Yeah.
So Trump didn't offer any proof, by the way, that this was happening.
No.
But we suspect that it was related to a Breitbart article that had been circulating around the White House claiming as
news.
Much. You know, the news.
He read it on the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then a few commentators also hilariously pointed out that The Guardian had actually reported that the FBI in July had applied for a warrant to monitor some Trump associates and were rejected.
Right.
Because they were trying to monitor this Russia situation. This was related to the Russia stuff. But so that had been out for weeks.
Right.
So he just like came to this story that's vaguely related to another story that was a story that makes him look bad.
Right.
So,
and we also know that the Trump campaign was indeed spying on the Clinton campaign.
They had given a $10,000 donation to Project Veritas, which is this right-wing spy organization that infiltrated the Clinton campaign and a bunch of they tried to infiltrate the Clinton campaign. They instead infiltrated a bunch of outside groups aligned with the Clinton campaign and then started publishing internal campaign details, and Trump started using those on the stump. So Trump was spying himself on his opponents, but apparently he draws the line at being spied on for what can only be reasons that a FISA court has approved.
Right, exactly. Well, that's the thing that is so insane about this, because there are two ways that Trump Tower could have been wiretapped if it was. It could have been done illegally by the Obama administration.
We don't have any proof of this,
and if it was done illegally, then he's probably right. That is on the level of Watergate, because that would be pretty, that would be
but
pretty crazy.
In order for that to be true, it would have had to happen, and we would need some proof that
and
it
we would need
happened.
Some proof. The other way that it could have been wiretapped was to actually get a court order to have done so. And the only way that a court would give an order to wiretap Trump Tower is if there was proof that there was actually some real shenanigans going on in there. So neither of
and
these...
And then he has to explain the shenanigans. You know?
Well, I know.
Once, if that's the case, then they probably will have to release some confidential court
documents.
I hope
it was bugged, and I hope it was done by a court order.
Absolutely. Let's find out why.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but so in any case, there's really no good way out of this, because either he's lying or he did something wrong.
Right, exactly.
There's not a
Those
great
are the two
option
options.
For him to just have been wronged in this situation.
No, there's not.
And also kind of lost in the scandal of all of this was a Lewandowski was back on the airwaves.
Oh, sure.
Fucking
yes.
Lewandowski. Yeah. He said that Obama had been listening in on Jeff Sessions conversations with the Russian ambassador.
Sure.
So
also
claiming,
no proof.
No proof there either.
Basically, everybody's bugged. Obama bugged everybody.
He bugged everyone. He was just a huge, you know, spy organization arose under Obama that no one has any proof of at all, but we can just imagine it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like they're creating their own conspiracies out of their own brains, which is mostly just ideas they're having about how to proceed in the future.
Right. But what is sort of funny about this is that Trump is not one for subtlety at all.
He's
not. And it should be clear to everyone why he brought this up in the first place, because this is obviously in response to a report days earlier about Obama, basically the Obama administration sort of like did all they could to preserve everything in regards to this Russian hacking.
Right.
Because what they didn't want to happen was it to sort of like all be collected in one place, because they were afraid that future administrations would be able to then pretty much just shut it down.
Right.
So they sort of scattered it throughout the intelligence community and to different places. And they basically left breadcrumbs is what they did for anybody who sort of like wanted to look into this.
Right.
Like,
they
could
were very
go
concerned
and they could
about
connect
a peaceful
the dots.
Transfer of power, but also wanted to make sure this information was preserved.
Was there. Yes. And so that was reported like on Wednesday or Thursday in the New York Times. And so Trump was obviously just pissed about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this was in response to. I mean, it's sort of like he couldn't help himself. He was just so mad. He got his Twitter window.
Exactly. And he was like, I better get up early on Saturday and get
while
to
I
work.
Can. Yeah, exactly.
But then hilariously, after this all kind of backfired in their face, Sean Spicer today announces that the White House and the president aren't going to comment further on it until Congress investigates.
Oh, sure. Yes.
So now they've decided to refuse to comment further on a story they made up
in
the
first
place.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, don't refuse to, like, if you made it up and are proffering it, who else is going to repeat it if you won't comment on it?
I know. You have to keep the story going.
You're the only people
knowing it's
who
a
care
fake
about
story.
The story.
Right. Yeah. Like, you have to keep talking about it.
Yeah, it's like kind of hilarious that their response would be to just, well, we're not going to talk about it anymore. Right.
But do you think that now that this story has taken over, that the story about the voter fraud is gone? Or is that going to...
Are they going to cycle back in?
Yeah, this seems to be a thing. They, you know, well, he's just one of those people who's into conspiracies, yes. as we know from
Birthergate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But, you know, you kind of wonder, you know, they have a span and then they let that fall away and then they start another one. And yeah, probably, right. By, right. You know, by Monday or Tuesday, they'll be talking again about the voter fraud.
Probably, right. Yeah.
Yeah, they have a few go-tos.
Right. Right. Yes.
They like, they have a few scandals. And then all that happens is that Drudge Report publishes 12 headlines for 7 days that right. are just like every individual case of an undocumented person going right, near exactly. a polling place.
Yep.
And then for this, they're going to publish every unsubstantiated claim
yeah.
that the Obama administration. But what's so funny about a lot of the way that this, the ways this information gets disseminated to even his supporters is if you actually read the articles, for the most part, you have nothing.
Right.
It's always just incendiary headlines. That's totally. What I love about Drudge Report.
Yeah.
When you actually click on the headlines, you're like, oh, literally nothing yeah, happened. This is not important.
Yeah, it's clickbait.
It's clickbait.
Yeah,
and
clickbait
so
headlines.
This story, because it has no content, is going to be maybe clickbait for a while, but there's never going to be a single story written about it if they refuse to talk about it. They're the only ones with the fake evidence because they're making the evidence up.
Right, exactly.
No one else is going to find any evidence because it's not there.
It's not there, yeah.
In any case,
yeah.
Did you know that healthcare policy... is kind of complicated.
It's tricky.
Have you heard about how complicated healthcare is?
Right.
Trump has been meeting with, in sort of the joint sessions weekend activities, met with the Governor's Association and a bunch of CEOs.
Yeah.
And he's been shit-talking Obamacare a lot this week because they're yeah. trying to rev up everyone up to replace it.
He also,
or not replace it, to just repeal it.
I don't know if you read this, but he welcomed all of the governors and their wives. By the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well,
many...
Brent, ladies can't be governors.
Well, but there were many in the room at the time.
There were.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, so. Only lesbians would be governors, and I think we know. So in any case, he, first of all, as part of his shtick where he's, like, trying to talk about how shitty Obamacare is, because he was re-upping his commitment to repealing and replacing it, because
yeah.
he started going on first about how maybe we should just let it be terrible, because then we can blame the Democrats.
Right.
Then he used... some confusing logic to explain why it just keeps getting more popular every passing moment.
Right.
Its popularity is only going up, and that's because people are finding out it exists and that it's the same thing as the Affordable Care Act. The more they talk about it, the more people find out they're on it.
Sure.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
He theorized that the polls that are showing its increasing popularity are only because people know that the Republicans will soon repeal it.
Well, maybe.
I mean, maybe that. But he seemed to like imply that people only like something if it's like they're wistfully,
Sure.
It's like they're reminiscing about it before
yes,
it happens.
Nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Yeah. He said, people hate it, but now they see the end is coming and they're saying, oh, maybe we love it. There's nothing to love. It's a disaster, folks.
Yeah.
But then hilariously, he also said to them, I have to tell you, it's an unbelievably complex subject. Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Yeah.
We did.
Except everyone.
We knew.
Yeah.
You know who else knew? The Democrats.
The Democrats, uh-huh.
They were aware.
Hillary Clinton.
That's why Obamacare is not the massive success that you expected
right.
it to be, where
exactly.
every single person is covered for $0.
Right.
It's because the Democrats knew. You know who else knew? Is most Republicans.
Yeah.
That's why they're not actually rushing to repeal it at the moment.
Right,
because they're
exactly.
realizing they have no fucking way to replace it.
Exactly, yes.
But it's like he's just finding out that all of his talking points are not actually possible.
Yeah.
Just as they come.
Well, he's never thought about anything past the talking point.
No. He's just like, we should have good health care. And everyone's like, yeah.
Right.
And he's like, we'll have it.
Yeah.
He's like, okay. You
great.
You figure out the details, Trump, and you get back to me.
Oh, like, no.
No.
This is hard.
So, yeah,
guys.
It's hard. It turns out it's hard. Maybe we should just let it fail and let the Democrats go down for it.
Yeah.
Let's do nothing instead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except, of course, now the Democrats aren't the ones who will go down for it.
No.
Great.
You know,
yeah.
They now bought it, they own it.
Right.
Exactly.
I was
going to
say. Right. Yep. Right. Exactly. They are in control of every branch of government right,
right.
now.
So there is no world in which they are
yeah.
not responsible for what happens next.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump also promised that in response to the many marches that have been going on against him all over the nation, including the biggest march in U.S. history.
Yeah.
That they were going to have their own set of marches.
Yes,
the Trump people
right.
were going to have their own marches, and
yes.
those were going to be the biggest in history.
Right. There was a there were March for Trump rallies on March 4th.
Exactly.
Whatever. Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sure.
So on the organizer's website, they said President Trump has thankfully set a new course, and no matter your race, creed, color, gender, orientation, age, or anything else, traitors exploit to divide. We the people are one. Come show your support for him, each other, and our country. And a
couple
handful
people did.
Did.
Tens yes. of people did, in fact. Right.
Yes.
I think uh-huh. the Times headline was hundreds, but it was like sure. in context of what the Times, you know, normally they underreport and it's like thousands or right. tens of thousands, and it was actually like 3 million people or
right.
something.
Exactly.
This they just reported hundreds, and then the Twitter responses to that were all just jokes about hundreds.
Oh yeah.
Like all of the pictures right. were hilarious.
The photos are like people walking around with like Trump campaign signs and American flags, like probably wondering if they were in the right place.
Yes.
Yeah. The best one that I saw was a woman was sitting in a beach chair, and there's a cutout of Trump next to her, and she's it.
That was it. Yeah,
just a woman yeah. and her Trump cutout.
Yeah, sure. She probably takes that with her everywhere.
Oh yeah, of course.
Probably.
But yeah, it's just like a couple people milling around, right. like you find at every rally of thousands or tens right. of thousands exactly. that you see these days.
Yeah. But it came on the heels of like the best Twitter burn in yes. a while, and Bernie Sanders is often great on Twitter, but this was really good because Trump had, like, these rallies were in response to Trump earlier in the week saying maybe the millions of people who voted to make America great again, which is in all caps,
yeah.
should have their own rally. It would be the biggest of them all. And Sanders tweeted back, they did, it wasn't. And it was that side-by-side picture of the inauguration and the Women's March. It was like, yeah, Bernie.
Did it. Yeah,
really
he gets
came
it.
To play.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a man in his 70s who understands Twitter.
Twitter, that's right. Yes,
you know, that's yeah. I. Or, by the way, do you think that all of the nation's problems are related to the fact that politics is currently just people in their 70s on Twitter?
Like, could well be.
Like, why is this?
Good well be.
Why?
Oh boy.
Hey guys, remember when we heard that we were just the other day in the State
right
of the
on
Union
Tuesday.
Or in the joint session speech, we heard that we were going to build a Keystone and it would be made of all American steel.
Yeah.
And then we had an executive order about
right.
it. We're going to build all our pipelines in American
right.
steel.
He's talked to union leaders about it. He talked to the CEO of U.S. Steel. He has talked to, I mean, he said this on every campaign stop. Like you said, he said it on Tuesday. But apparently he was just kidding.
Yeah.
Actually.
Apparently Keystone is not going to be made all of
right.
American steel.
And his executive order basically is garbage.
Exactly. Also, is not really executive ordering anyone to make anything out of American steel.
It's
ordering us to consider ways in which we could potentially regulate the use
under the law.
Under the law,
we can't because we belong to the WTO and we can't favor domestic industries.
Right.
So
it turns out that neither Keystone nor any future
pipeline or any future
can
building
be made of
infrastructure building at all.
Right.
By law, can be
required to be made of American
regardless
steel.
Of his stupid executive order.
Yeah, he can. Well, it's like one. You can put all the executive orders out you want. Only the legal ones can be enforced.
Right.
That's the problem.
We know this from the travel ban.
Exactly.
Which we found out
you can
wasn't actually
write
legal.
Anything you want in right. an executive order.
Right.
It
Steve
has to
Bannon
be legal.
Can go wherever you know whatever hole he wants and you know just whip out executive orders. But
right.
They
the only the legal
anything.
Ones are enforced
yeah,
or
exactly.
should be enforced.
Yeah. And
so,
I am one who thinks it would be great if we would make, I mean, I don't think we should be making the Keystone Pipeline, but
right.
if we're going to make it, let's use American steel.
Of course.
So, like, I'm for that.
Right.
But, I mean,
unfortunately,
it's just,
promising things that can't actually happen that people would maybe be for if they were possible, but are, like, unfortunately impossible is not a thing.
Yeah.
You can't decide that that's what you're going to do for your presidency.
But isn't one of the problems that there isn't any more American steel?
Yeah, there's
not
enough American steel.
Well, yes.
And because of that, it's way too expensive to make these pipelines out
well,
of American steel.
Well, that's
why we're
not
using it.
Which is
why we're not using it. Yeah, because you can't make pipelines out of American steel that's not there.
Right.
That's just...
Or you can't afford to buy.
Or you can't afford to buy. That's just math. And as someone who's not been bankrupt 6 times, I understand basic math.
Right. Exactly.
Fortunately, we can't say that for the president.
Yeah.
Hey Brent.
Yeah.
Have you put any more thought into Hillary's emails since Donald Trump got elected president?
No, I hadn't because I hadn't put much thought into them in the first place.
Right. Is there maybe another kind of email that you've put your thought into instead? Another person's email dealings?
Well, not until this week.
Who? What happened?
Oh.
Tell us what happened.
Oh yeah, Mike Pence apparently is a person with an AOL account, which
first of all
isn't shocking.
Stop that.
Right.
I mean, a man with such regressive views would
surprised.
Have an AOL account.
Right,
that's
exactly.
obvious.
Yeah.
But
what is potentially surprising about it is that he was using it to conduct Indiana state business.
Yeah, as you do when you're on AOL.
Yeah, right.
First
exactly.
of all, it's very secure because no one's on it.
Right, exactly. Except it did get hacked, by the way, unlike Hillary Clinton's email,
right.
which did not
which
get hacked.
Which just could have been hacked.
Could have been hacked.
But weren't.
Mike Pence's was by a hacker who sent out an email to all of his contacts
yeah.
telling them that Mike Pence and his wife were stuck in the Philippines and needed money fast.
You know the kind. Dear good sirs.
I know. In broken English, I'm sure, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Apparently, yeah. the current Indiana governor's office released 29 pages from his AOL account. They declined to release a number of them because the state considers them confidential.
Right, exactly. Confidential.
But you know who has them is AOL.
That's right.
The people who were running that account, exactly. Which is not secure.
Well, and so he sort of kind of, on a technicality, was like skirting Indiana law because it is not illegal to be doing this in Indiana, but it is...
They probably didn't know they should be regulating
it. But it is expected that these emails would still be able to be, you know, entered into the public record.
Right.
And if you are using AOL and you are sending it to another private email server, so like to another AOL account or to a Gmail account, that's not able to be searched as part of the government record because you would be searching through government email addresses.
Right.
So like he could be getting... around, there's probably emails that we don't even know existed of his because they just went from his AOL account to another AOL account. And
only AOL knows they exist.
Only AOL
knows a private company knows they exist.
And some of these were, I mean, obviously, like, he wasn't working for the U.S. State Department, so whether some of these were, you know, national security issues, probably not. But there were some things.
Maybe there were about, state security issues.
I was going to say, there were
emails
about, like, people who had been arrested on, you know, terrorist charges or something in Indiana. I mean, there were things that were, you know, sent from this address that were should have probably not been sent from this address.
It's interesting because in September, Mike Pence himself called Hillary Clinton the most dishonest candidate for president in the United States since Richard Nixon.
Ah, yes.
But,
which would make him maybe the most hypocritical candidate for vice president since I don't know who.
Yeah, and we'll just leave you with that.
There you go.
Meanwhile, here's a fun fact. If you remove Hillary Clinton from a Democratic ticket, Democrats are showing up all over the place.
Yeah, we're killing it right now.
We're killing it right now.
Yeah.
Before we get into this, we should remind you that if you live in the city of LA, there are elections here in March 7th.
Exactly.
That's coming up on Tuesday.
Yeah, so, and I'm excited because I get to vote in the Los Angeles elections.
I know,
too.
And I'm excited because I get to vote in the West Hollywood elections.
So I get to vote against that sham of a Measure S.
I know.
Because I was looking at the, like, Galen, our friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast,
Galen. Galen. Was like, lives in West Hollywood and was looking at his ballot, and he was like, where's Measure S? And I was like, it's a city.
I know, everyone wants to vote
it.
On Measure S,
right,
but in West Hollywood we can't. But in West Hollywood instead, we can vote for the pro and anti-development Democrats.
Oh, yes.
We have our own Measure
and
S situation going on.
Too,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, we have a big problem with that.
Yeah.
So
vote in those.
Yeah, vote in those. And if you have questions, tweet us. We'll answer them.
Yeah.
We're doing it. I've already filled out two people's ballots for them, so.
Sure. Yeah. You're good at that.
They signed them themselves and approved it, you guys.
Right,
I didn't commit voter fraud.
They told you to do it. Yes.
I filled out their
information
booklet.
You weren't stealing ballots from mailboxes.
No, I was filling out their information booklets.
Yes.
And they are filling out their own ballots in accordance with the California state law.
Yeah.
In any case.
There have been, since the November election, there have been 9 special elections for state legislative seats.
Yes.
And in 7 of those, the Democrats have done way better than they did in those particular legislative districts than they did in November. In some of them,
crazily
by
better,
an insane margin.
Now, we only won 5 of them, but some of them were in like very heavily
some
Republican
of them were,
districts.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so, there was like a district in Minnesota where like Trump won by like 32 percentage points, and the Democrat in this special election only lost by 6. So it was like a 26-point swing there.
Well, and you may remember from this podcast 2 years ago that Democrats almost never show up in midterm elections or any non-cycle, non-presidential cycle elections.
So there, you
know, this is pretty exciting.
Right. Yeah, this is exciting. And of course, some of this is to do with
the new engagement.
The new engagement and due to like the, you know, what has happened since Trump took office. And we can certainly, you know, write some of it off to that. And that's great.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't be engaged because, for God's sake, we should be and we should always be. We should have been 2 years ago during the midterms. But certainly some of this has to be, you know, due to the drag at the top of the ticket.
Yeah.
There's no way to contend otherwise.
Differences in some of these districts are massive.
Right. There have been.
We're talking about a 31-point difference between Clinton's, you know, the Clinton ticket's performance and a Democrat in a state Senate race in Iowa's performance without her on the ticket.
And 34 points, I think,
and
too.
Yeah,
also,
in another district,
there have been two
in
Iowa.
In a state
Iowa.
House
yeah.
one, the Democrat performed 45 points better than the Democrats had performed under the Clinton ticket.
Yeah.
Like, these are differences that are, you can win a race with 45 points. You don't need other points.
Right, exactly. Like, and while we did lose some of these, it offers, It's hopeful for a few reasons, because it is going to, it's going to mean good things in statewide races if you're doing that well. If you're if you're able to up how well you're doing in some of these percentages, even if, or in some of these districts, even if they're Republican districts in a statewide race,
right.
Like that's money important. Right there. Yeah, exactly. But also, you know, I think that like, there are just
the 50 state strategy.
Yeah,
lives.
Exactly. That's what we should
we
be
can
taking away from this. We
in every race.
And we should be.
And we should.
Yes.
And it matters not, you know, this is what I think a lot of Democrats have not been thinking about, the long game and the wide game, if you will.
Right.
Where we, you know, it's like how we have always said, maybe you can be mad that Jill Stein voters voted for Jill Stein, but you have to remember they showed up and voted for Democrats down ticket most likely. And you have to think about that when you tell them not to show up.
Right.
When you tell them they shouldn't vote,
yeah,
when you encourage exactly. them, when you say, if you don't vote for my candidate, don't bother voting,
right.
you have to remember they show up for other candidates as well. In a situation like this, we have to remember that if Democrats remember to vote in a local race in a heavily Republican district, even if they had no chance of winning, they're right. more likely to show up in a statewide election. They are more likely to be engaged. They're more likely to talk to their neighbors over the course of the next year and get them to show up. I mean, engaged voters generate more engaged voters, and engaged voters show up for every race.
Yes.
So you want to make sure that there is an option on the ballot for Democrats to be excited about, no matter where you live and why, you know, why the district is hopeless.
Yes, exactly.
There's another part of it that I'm learning from this upstate New York district that I live in, which is a Republican district, and that is that the Democrats never put up candidates against these people. So because of that, right now the campaigns are very inexpensive. You can run for state senate in upstate New York for $70,000, which is basically the salary, the annual salary you would get as a state legislator. Yeah. Plus benefits, plus it's a good job for young people.
Sure. Because
it's a part-time job. It's not even
Most state assembly and senate jobs are part-time.
This is a really good year to do it, because the Republicans aren't expecting it, because what they do when they expect it is the state Republican Party in New York puts all this money into the race that you can't possibly. So like Senate seat, which is contested, will go for $1 million, whereas the state Senate seat where I live is goes for like $300,000. This year it would be possible to raise enough money to actually do it before the Republicans realize that, oh, you know, we're going to have to.
I love, by the way, that we have to discuss these seats as what they cost.
Yeah,
it's true.
But for young people, because one of the things that I think is really important is that young people really consider it, especially young people who are having a hard time finding jobs, because they're well-paying jobs.
Yeah,
in many cases,
and they set you up.
And they set you up. You don't ever have to worry again about a job. You may become a lobbyist or something.
You might become evil, but you'll be working.
Exactly. Yeah.
You'll be able to pay your bills.
Yeah,
but And I think another thing that running someone in every district helps with, just one more point back to my mom's district, is their state assembly, state senate, and congressional districts are all unrelated pockets of people. So they share a state assembly person with people in a different congressional district. They share state senate people with people they don't share with either two of those people.
Yeah.
If you have candidates on the ballot in every election, then you have a cohesive group of Democrats that are always working for the candidates in their specific location.
Yeah.
If you only run some people sometime, you're relying on a disorganized group of Democrats who aren't used to working together, who don't know each other, and possibly in New York State, it's so badly gerrymandered, don't even live within driving distance of each other, who are suddenly going to have to coordinate for one race one time.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And actually, we're going to talk about in the next story, actually, is a story about
gerrymandering,
but it's out of Virginia, which has a Republican-controlled state legislature, and the Democrats are intending to run somebody in all 100 of the state legislative districts this year. And they actually just got some good news from the Supreme Court, because they had brought a case to the Supreme Court about gerrymandering, because the Republican legislature had redrawn a bunch of districts, and they, you know, put African Americans, clumped them, sort of redrew these districts.
Right, so that they had no voting power.
So they didn't have any voting power. And so a lower court had upheld the legislature, the state legislature's gerrymandering. And the Supreme Court said,
Yeah.
They didn't say that what the legislature had done was wrong, but they said what the lower court used
to justify it,
they had used like the wrong measures. So they basically sent it back to the lower courts and said, you guys messed this up. So they didn't go quite as far as maybe some people wanted them to, but the Democrats and African Americans in Virginia were all celebrating this as like, because they think the lower court is going to have to relook at it. And there's only one way to, there's only one different way to look at it, which
is to not draw lines in such a way that certain racial groups don't have any voting power.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, the redistricting will occur in 2021 after the 2020
after the census. Right.
So we're right up against it
Yeah, exactly. This is an important time.
Yeah, this is the time to prepare for it. But it's also important to go, you can find maps of your districts. And it's really important to go and look at the maps of your districts because then you really realize how crazy.
Yeah, I don't think people, a lot of people know.
No, they don't.
Well, and this is what, I mean, my mom is doing this in her district where she's been running a website where you can access all this information. And then she also compiles what all of their representatives have been doing, what they're voting on.
That's great.
You know, stuff like that. That's something that really should happen in every district.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's not only hard to find out what your district looks like, it's hard to find out what anyone's up to in your district.
Exactly. Well, and the gerrymandering issue is a thing that the Democrats are now really making a hard push against, which is great because they need to. They actually, I think Obama did this actually, but Eric Holder is now overseeing a group who is basically going to be looking into like taking lawsuits about, you know, some of these crazy districts and the gerrymandering by state legislatures and trying to work this out. And the only way that we can, unless it's done through the courts, the only way that you can sort of un-gerrymander some of these districts is to gain control of some of these state legislatures, which is why it's so important to run. To run people.
Yeah. You got to have someone to do it. Yeah. Someone has to be able to show up and do it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the only people that voted against this were Alito and Clarence Thomas, right?
Right. And even Alito sort of like agreed, like generally in principle, but like didn't sign on to Kennedy's.
Clarence Thomas is the actual worst and said that he doesn't think race should be used as a consideration when it comes to drawing legislative maps, which is real rich because that is literally what is being used to draw these legislative maps in these districts. It's just that the race they're considering the privilege, the needs of is white people.
Right.
If you're drawing a district specifically to make sure that black people can't vote, have no voting power.
You're using race.
You're using race.
Right. Exactly.
That's it. Yeah. Nanke, speaking of terrible states doing awful things.
Oh, my God.
Texas is really getting inventive when it comes to figuring out how to stop people from having abortions.
They're getting creative. I'll hand it to them. I wish they would use their creativity for good.
I know. They literally introduced a bill to give doctors the right to lie to pregnant women about the babies they're carrying's condition, essentially. Yeah.
Because basically what it's called, it's called the Wrongful Births Bill. And what it does
That doesn't even sound positive.
I know. They didn't use their creativity on the naming of the bill.
No.
But what it does is it allows doctors to lie to women about whether their baby might have some sort of genetic defect if they think that knowing that information would lead to that woman having an abortion.
Yeah. Which, first of all, that is not legal. That is providing an obstacle in practice to women exercising their right to choose because you're not giving them real information
That is actually part of Roe v. Wade too.
That's the thing that prevents a lot of these laws from actually ending up being legal is not that they physically make it fully impossible for a woman to have an abortion, but that they provide hurdles that make it impossible for them to make an informed choice.
Right, exactly.
And that is literally what this does because lying to a woman about her own health should not be legal.
Yeah. No, period. It shouldn't be. Yeah. And the Texas.
That seems fairly obvious to me.
And there's a Senate committee. The Texas Senate Committee on State Affairs has already passed the bill. And that is who would legislate how much information a woman is allowed to receive about her own pregnancy. And I would contend that she should be allowed to receive all of it.
Yeah. All the information about her pregnancy should be allowed to be received by the woman who is pregnant.
And that doesn't seem like a controversial stance.
I know. This is so creative that I feel like it's almost contradicting like their own fake talking points.
Yeah,
but it also for the medical community to be put into that type of situation is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, that isn't...
And you would think that, although I don't know what's going on in Texas, you would think that most doctors would not participate in denying information to women.
Especially if you are a doctor who refuses to provide this information and birth complications cause this woman to die or be in some way gravely injured, then you are a doctor who did not do, you know, who that's a malpractice case. I mean, then right, you are exactly. a doctor who was right. put in a situation by the law that put yeah. you, that made you right. commit
or,
malpractice.
Yeah. Or, a woman, you know, carries through with her pregnancy and then, you know, finds out that, you know,
you knew all along,
right, that she was withheld information. I mean, that also seems like that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. It's also yeah. just, it's
like, gross.
It's
great.
Yeah, it's shameful. Yeah.
Stop that.
And yeah. Ooh, Texas, man.
I know. Yikes. Well, if you're living anywhere in America and you're feeling lonely.
Yeah.
There's a new,
yeah.
Do you get a new way for you to get your kicks.
Yeah. Some cheap thrills at the TSA.
Apparently, starting in the next few weeks, the TSA is going to change their pat-down approach in mm-hmm. a way that they described as, quote, involving more intimate contact. Their spokesperson said, I would say people who in the past have gotten a pat-down that wasn't involved will notice that the new pat-down is more involved. And then a passenger recently got it and said, this was the most intriguing, intense, and evasive pat-down I have had by the TSA since they came into existence.
Intriguing?
Like an intriguing
is the word that intrigues me most in that quote. What? Like, an intriguing pat-down.
That really does make it sound inappropriate.
It makes it sound inappropriate, but also, like, I would like to go see what it's about.
Right. It sounds like there's a lot of questions, unanswered yeah. questions, and I like really? Answers.
Yeesh.
And if you were worried that all of this scandal-mongering has cut into Donald Trump's time to shit-talk the Celebrity Apprentice on Twitter, you're wrong.
He tweeted this later in the day on Saturday after he had tweeted
about
Obama wiretapping the... Yeah,
it was before sundown on a Saturday. Right? He was busy.
Exactly, yes. Schwarzenegger had announced on Friday that he wasn't going to be returning to the show for a second season. And in an interview, he said, with Trump being involved in the show, people have a bad taste and don't want to participate as a spectator or a sponsor or in any other way support the show. And I feeling he's probably right about that.
He's not been shy about shit-talking Donald Trump,
no,
by the
he
way.
Hasn't.
He said, didn't he say
something?
He offered
to switch jobs with him.
He said if we switch jobs, people might sleep better at night.
Yes,
and he's right. And we live
right.
under the terror of
it wasn't great.
Donald Schwarzenegger as governor. We know he's not a great governor.
No.
But I would certainly sleep better than with Donald Trump as the head of
him,
you know. In any case, Trump caught wind of it and just nagged him all day. You know? Wouldn't let it go.
Tweeted at him later, and he said, Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't voluntarily leaving The Apprentice. He was fired by his bad, pathetic ratings, not by me. Sad end to a great show.
I like that he needed an acronym for bad in there so that we would know he meant bad, pathetic.
Pathetic,
not,
yeah. Pathetic
not
is in
bad,
parentheses.
Evil, or bad, you know, like...
Right.
Yeah, pathetic is in parentheses. He's been on a weird parentheses because that's even with that Obama thing. He said that Obama is a bad and then parentheses or sick.
Or sick.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Didn't he also, he misspelled hereby like three times on Twitter this week. Did you see that?
Yes. I think we can conclude he's a man who doesn't know how to spell hereby.
And then was subtweeted again by Merriam-Webster.
I know.
Giving
I know.
Him the proper spelling of it.
Merriam-Webster is... getting it.
Yeah.
They get it. They're people who get it. They know words and they get it. That's
right.
The two things they have.
Yeah.
And in final news.
Oh boy.
We're starting to think that maybe there should be a celebrity party.
A celebrity. Yeah.
And
exactly.
they can have their own primary.
They can have their own primary.
And they can put up a candidate for president every year.
Yeah.
Because now Oprah Winfrey.
She wants to get in the game.
Wants to get in on the game. Mm-hmm. She was speaking with a I can't say it. I was going to say financier. That's not right.
Financer. Yeah, sure.
No.
Financier.
I don't know.
Financier, or right, something like that. Financier or something.
Yeah.
David Rubenstein.
Yeah.
On an episode of a Bloomberg show that is his show called The David Rubenstein Show, Peer-to-Peer Conversations, where rich people talk to each other. And he asked her whether she'd run for president, and she basically said, like, I'd never thought about it, but now I'm sort of like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah, but, she's right. And then he responded to her, right, because it's clear that you don't need government experience to be elected president of the United States, right? And she responded, I thought, oh, gee, I don't have the experience. I don't have enough. And now I'm thinking, oh. So there we go. Oprah Winfrey, 2020.
But here's the thing. Kanye West has already declared his intention to run.
Yep.
Donald Trump will probably run again.
Right.
What if they just ran against each other?
I was
going
to say, do they have to run in their own primary? Because Trump is a
I've had
Republican,
an idea.
Supposedly. Anyway.
He's not a Republican.
No, he's not.
Let's put up a real Republican and a celebrity candidate. He can be a celebrity.
Yeah.
What if we let them run on a TV presidential campaign that isn't the real campaign?
Yeah, oh, I like that. Yeah. Yes, that's good. And the winner just wins a prize that they can give to charity or
the
something like that.
The winner wins being named the best, most important celebrity in the world or
right,
something.
Exactly,
like, what if we just do it for television?
Yeah, I like that.
President Apprentice.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm into that.
Yeah,
I'm not convinced any of the three of these would win. Oprah might.
Yeah, I feel like I would vote for Oprah right. in the celebrity
it's
presidential
that
apprentice.
Trump could win the GOP primary, but probably not the celebrity primary, right? Yeah.
I know. Well, he was running as a celebrity. There just wasn't enough star power in the race.
Right, yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's all that he really
right.
had
Once
to go
Once you're running
on.
Against Jeb Bush and
right.
you know, Lindsey Graham.
A bunch
I mean,
of loser nonsense people.
You walked to the finish line
exactly.
at that point, I mean.
Yeah, like yeah. First of all, Marco Rubio can't deliver a speech without embarrassing himself horribly.
No.
You know, Lindsey Graham's like a fake person.
It's going to be really interesting to see if there is a Republican primary in 2020. So.
I know.
Well,
it wouldn't surprise me if there is.
Yeah, I don't think Trump is going to be around that long.
That's true.
And I think also that Pence is, I mean, there will be a few moments when people feel like, oh, he's an okay, you know, he's a reasonable person, and they're going to find out very quickly that
he's not
isn't.
Right. Exactly.
So I don't know what to expect from them in 2020.
I don't either.
If he does hang on, I feel like there's a good chance there is a primary, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, I think that by that point, it will be so embarrassing to be a Republican, they will have to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I think it'll be a potentially different story
if it's Pence.
But you're right. I mean, it just depends. I think it depends where the country is.
Yeah, I think what it's dependent on is how threatened the Republicans are feeling.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think
totally.
They're going to, at some point, I think it's going to be very much like what happened with Nixon and Agnew. At some point, they're going to move Trump out, and then they're going to put in a vice president who they trust, someone like Kasich, and then they're going to move Pence out.
Well, because I don't think Pence could win a national election.
No, I don't either.
No one likes
him.
And
he'll bring everybody down with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, because they can't be like, he's a lunatic and we don't have anything to do with him.
Yeah.
He's one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that if Trump goes, I think you're right that we have like a Kasich situation on our hands.
Yeah.
And I think that that might be dangerous because Kasich, I think, could win a national election. But I don't know that he would in this situation.
And, you know, Gerald Ford was the same thing. He would have, you know, he was supposed to win that. He was such a reasonable guy and all of that. And yet, when he pardoned Nixon, they always do something like that.
Yeah, right.
Then that was like the kiss of death.
Yeah,
when he pardoned Nixon.
Yeah, no, yeah. They always make a mistake.
Interestingly, one thing that I forgot to mention when we were talking about all of those local state races is there is a Democrat who has been going around and helping out at all of those state races.
There sure
races.
Has been.
Yeah,
Monsieur Martin O'Malley.
Oh, good for him.
And he had a good dig at Clinton.
Right, has been camped out. It was in those Iowa races, which seems like an interesting, or a not interesting choice. It seems like a pretty blatant choice, I would say, probably.
And he recently said, our message and our policies are absolutely sound and truthful and will resonate when delivered by credible messengers.
Yeesh.
Yeah. But you know also that with the Delaware election.
Yeah, he was there too.
Yeah, and so was Our Revolution. The Democrats and Our Revolution worked together on that. So that's
something
positive.
That, you know, I think even, you know, we have these other groups coming up like Brand New Congress and the Justice Democrats.
Yeah.
And I think that in certain districts, it would be really helpful if we instead, you know, they hate the establishment Democrats.
Sure.
But I know they would work with them if they had a candidate that
they believed in. Right.
And it would be useful to have the energy of the ex-Sanders people behind Democratic candidate that is also supported by the establishment.
Yeah.
We would have a lot of power in that combination. Yeah. So I think it's worth it for the Democrats to start thinking about places where they can work with these other organizations that have huge amounts of grassroots authority and credibility.
Right.
Right.
Excitement,
and
too.
Exactly.
I mean,
But another thing they need to be, this is my big thing, and it'll, they need to talk about is how to mentor new people coming into it now because there isn't the bench there to, you know, in my district for congressmen, there isn't a state senator. You have to go to like city ward, counselor or whatever in order who's been elected before. So we have to go outside of that. But these people who are interested in doing it, they need mentoring. They need people, political people, not just to advise them. All the Democratic Party does is advise them on fundraising, but they need people to advise them on messaging, to help them write their material.
Yeah, how to run a campaign.
Right. I met an Uber driver the other day who's a young guy.
She just recruited an Uber driver to run for
office.
Yeah, no, he's a young guy. He's from Whittier, California. And we were talking about it, and I said, you should run for office. And he said, well, people have told me that because he developed a dog park in Whittier. It took 5 years, he and some other people.
Yeah.
And he knows how to deal with, you know, with city government. Sure. He knows how to deal with politicians. He started this whole project because he took his dog to the park and the police told him he had to walk his dog in the park. And he said, well, then we have to have a dog park. Yeah. And those are the type of people who are much more valuable than people who've been, you know, in a position for 20 years and haven't really, you know, have just kind of gone along. So but mentoring is very, very important to it.
Yeah. Well, then that is the news this week.
That's it.
Next week, we'll have more news.
Oh, God. It
keeps coming.
Couldn't possibly tell you what it'll be.
Nope. No guesses.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
And if you want to, if you have any thoughts about some of the electoral strategies we've discussed, you can find us on Twitter. And also, you can find my mom's website, Seeds of Democracy, at seedsofdemocracy.com, right?
Yeah, nice. Seedsofdemocracy.org.
.org. Okay. Which it's I think, something that someone in every district should volunteer to take up, because it's useful information that is helpful for organizing purposes and also just helpful for the purposes of being an engaged citizen who knows where they live and who they vote for and why.
Yeah.
And how their representatives are voting. So that's something
to look
at. Thank you. Yeah. In any case, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.